This is Amarin's.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 27 of my podcast. It's Friday, July 20th, 2007. And joining me today is Nigel again. Hello, Nigel.
Hello.
I should probably explain why we're recording together today. Nigel's been fighting off a bad cold over the past week or so, and he's so graciously decided to share it with me.
So I've got my husky voice going today.
Yeah, I'm a bit...
So forgive my coughing.
Like that. And I'm a bit gravelly myself. Well, the last episode that you were on was one of my most downloaded episodes, oddly enough. Can't imagine why.
Oddly enough.
No, and it seems that a couple podcasts tend to be among the most popular for most people. So that might have something to do with it. But after you were on, one of my listeners, John Q. Public, left a bunch of questions in the comments.
Okay. And so, where's John Q. Public from?
I actually don't know.
From the U.S.?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I presume so.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know, John. You might want to tell me in the comments. So I thought the questions were really good, and I said that I would save them for the next time you're on, and you're on, so these are the questions.
Ask away.
He began it by saying, "Now, the faggot in me is very interested in you both answering the following questions, if they're not too personal." So it's okay to say if they're too personal.
Okay.
But the first one was, "When did Nigel know that he was gay, and had he dated any other Americans before Arthur came along?"
Ooh, that is a bit personal, isn't it? When did I know I was gay? I can think back to when I was about 5, actually.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, I can remember, this is a naughty story, when I was 5, I remember one of the boys I went to school with bought, must have got a dirty book from his father's stash, and it had nudie pictures in it, and they were all looking at the nude girls, and there was a nude guy in it, and I was like, ooh, I was interested in that, so I pinched the page with the new guy on it, but I don't remember it being sexual in any way, but I always do remember, I mean, I remember back when I was 5 or so, imagining, and you know, when you pretend when you're children, I imagine that I was going to grow up and marry a man. I never ever thought I was going to marry a woman, so yeah, probably be about 5, so yeah.
And had you dated any other Americans?
Couple or few. Depends what you mean dating. I had, in my younger years, I've had the opportunity to
the kindness of strangers.
Yeah. But you know, have I been in relationships with other Americans? No. Yeah, so just only rendezvous. The odd rendezvous, maybe the week or two long rendezvous, but that's about it.
Hmm. Well, I think I probably talked about that on Ramble's show, about these same things, because I don't remember specifically when I knew. But it's funny you said about the pictures, because I'd forgotten all about it. But when I was in primary school, one of the kids, who actually was a member of my dad's church, where his family was, brought in these porno pictures that his father had picked up in the Navy somewhere. And they were really old. They were black and white, and they were very posed, like from the 1930s or something. So I can't imagine where this guy got them from. He wasn't that old.
What, they had nudie men in them?
Both. But okay. There were, the one I remember distinctly was a naked man. He was standing up, and he had on black shoes, black socks, held up with those little garter things that they used to wear in the 30s.
Oh, very sexy.
And he was getting a blowjob from a woman who was fully dressed and sitting in a chair.
Oh, okay.
It was very strange, but I remember being fascinated by that. But somehow or other, somebody told the principal or whatever.
So I wondered why you had this thing about me walking around naked in my work shoes.
As if. Yes, but I'd actually forgotten about that until you mentioned the porno when you were 5. What's the next one? The next question is, what was Nigel's family's reaction to finding out he was gay? Was it a problem coming from such a large family?
It varied because, you know, everyone was in their different space. I told my youngest sister first. She's older than me, but she's youngest of the girls. And her reaction, I told her when I was, I must have been 17. And I remember her saying to me, oh, no, you're not. It's just the people you hang around with. And I sort of said, yeah, but the people I hang around with are because I'm gay. You know, it's the other way around. And we never really talked about it much because it wasn't really an issue. But when I finally came out to my family, I actually got my brother. I got my brother to tell my parents, because I mean, I wasn't sure what their reaction would be, and I just didn't want to be there. and you know, if it was going to be nasty or turn nasty, I thought, oh, I just don't want to hear that shit. So yeah, I opted out and got my brother to tell them, because, you know, I told all my brothers and sisters before I told my parents, and there were varying degrees of acceptance, because, you know, people were going through their own stuff at the time. But I remember when I told my older brother, he just said, look, he said, I don't care. He said, you're still my brother and I still love you. And it was pretty much, you know, generally with that reaction. And I, you know, I just sort of one at a time told my siblings, and I remember telling my older sister, I remember telling her, I was in the kitchen cooking dinner for her and her husband, and I told her in the kitchen, and she ran out into the lounge. She said, I told you, Shelby, he is gay. So she was quite pleased, because they'd sort of talked about it and thought that I was gay, and so she was pleased that she was right, because he said, oh, you know, don't make any, you know, any judgments or anything like that. If he is, he is. If he's not, he's not. So, and yeah, so it was different for each of them. And I think for the ones who it was more difficult for, because I don't think it was really difficult when you compare it to other people that I've spoken with. Stop looking at the recorder, Arthur.
I'm just glancing at him. I'm not actually looking at it.
It was varying for different reasons, because the people that had issues at the time were more about, oh, what would other people think? You know, like what my mum and dad, how would it affect my mum and dad, and what, how would, you know, how would they react? And, you know, how would their partners react? Because a couple of my sisters, it was like, oh, you know, now we're going to tell our husbands, and that might have been a problem. So it was that sort of stuff that went on, but it wasn't really about me. I think they generally knew. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard to think back. It's, you know, it's many years now. And, you know, my family are totally accepting, so it's, we don't have that sort of issue anymore. I remember, I don't know if your listeners know this, but, you know, I wasn't, you know, when I was in a relationship in Australia and my partner died, I remember my mum coming over, at the time, my mum coming over for the funeral, and I decided to move back to New Zealand after he died. And when I came back, I remember it was probably 18 months after he died. My mum was visiting, and I was sitting down in the lounge. I can't remember what I was doing. And I remember my dad was upstairs or something like that. It was at my place. And my mum said to me, she said, you know, she said, you're too young to be by yourself. You should be out there looking for somebody. You know, you shouldn't stop now. You know, you've been through a lot for someone your age. But it's time for you to get out there and start meeting people again. And that's when I think I knew that my family totally accepted me being gay. And, you know, that's history. And, yeah, well, you know what they're like.
Mm.
You know, my mum sees you as her son-in-law, and you know.
Well, your sisters refer to me as their brother-in-law.
Yeah, and my brother too, so.
Mm.
And your Uncle Arthur. And,
yeah.
And,
well, sort of related to that, actually. Pardon me.
That wasn't meant to be a sad story or anything.
That was a good story.
It was a good story, yeah. It's a good story. It's a good part of my life.
Yeah. I'm probably going to be coughing a bit myself. But anyway, the next question was, what was Nigel's family's reaction to him partnering with someone he had known a relatively short period of time?
They didn't make any judgments, really. I don't know whether they talked to each other about it, because they obviously wasn't in on the circle if they did. Because I never heard any gossip or anything, and it was, it was no great surprise. I mean, I didn't parade lots of men past them anyway. You know, I wasn't ever that sort of person. So
the man du jour.
Yeah, you know. So they, I mean, I talked about you and us communicating and all that sort of thing, and I think they were naturally intrigued. And I mean, you met Pam.
Mm.
My sister on the on your trip over here when you came over on holiday.
Did I meet your parents, or was that when I came back?
No, when you came back,
was it?
You met Mum and Dad, and yeah, they just took it. I think they just took it in their stride and thought, well, you know, he's an adult and he makes his own decisions, and yeah. I mean, I knew they accepted you, because the first time we went up to their place to stay, you and I got the spare double bed and double bedroom over my brother and his girlfriend, because they'd only been a short time together and we were living together. So we sort of got the double bed, and they got the two single beds in the other spare room.
We were more of a real couple, I guess.
Yeah. So we were sort of, so my mum and dad always saw us as a couple, not just dating sort of thing. So, you know, I always figured they accepted it, so quite openly, because we, you know, we got put in that room in the double bedroom, so.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be any issues at all.
No.
But I don't remember any with my family either. I mean, because, as you know, my sister, her husband is from Italy, so she was quite used to the idea. But my brother never said anything one way or the other. I think with me, the main thing was with a few friends. We were like, oh, I'll give you 6 months.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, I always thought of it, because, you know, a few of my friends were like, oh, really? They were intrigued to get to meet you, but... And they didn't realise how serious it was because, you know, I didn't really talk openly about my feelings so much as my excitement. But, yeah, I think everybody took it in their stride, you know.
And yet it was still new and unusual in those days too, because people didn't meet over the internet and whatnot or get to know each other.
Yeah, I always likened it to, we've talked about this, I likened it to back in the old colonial days in New Zealand where... there was a shortage of women in New Zealand, and often the English colonists that would come here would, you know, get into sort of pen pal relationships with women back in England, and, you know, those women would all but pack up their lives via letter and come move to New Zealand and live to be with men that they didn't even know. So, you know, it's not new, it's just higher speed and broadband.
Well, it wasn't broadband in those days.
No.
It was called dial-up.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, in those days it was snail mail, but, and it was very slow compared to even today's mail. But it's been going on for years, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it really isn't new. It's just the method has changed, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, a few of my friends had a laugh about you being a male or the bride.
I did too, I think.
Mm.
The next question is after we're together. Excuse me. It says, all couples have things they have to resolve in the long term. Were your issues complicated by the fact that you were from different continents, or did you simply meld together so easily? You both sound like you have very similar personalities, and this must have made your compatibility easier. I can't think of any real issues.
I actually don't... It's funny, because I don't think we have similar personalities.
Yeah, well, we probably don't see it.
No, we probably have a collective personality, because we've been together for 12 years.
What's it called? Wee brain?
Yeah. But, I mean, we do have, you know, our friends and family wouldn't think we have similar personalities.
Mm.
They think I'm the bossy, grouchy one. And
they'd be correct.
And you're the, you do what you're told. When you're told. But, yeah, I don't. I mean, I suppose I don't see us as having the same personalities, but maybe it's complementary and it looks that way when it's all mixed up in the soup.
Mm.
Yeah,
but the first part of the question was: all couples have things they need that they have to resolve in the long term, and were our issues complicated by the fact that we're from different continents? I don't really think so.
No, over time I've taught you to talk properly.
That particular word is actually one of those issues.
Let's not go there.
Okay.
I don't know. It's been fun learning, I suppose.
Hmm.
You know, your interest in different cultures and my interest in different cultures was probably part of the key to it working.
Yeah, this certainly would have helped.
Mm.
Yeah. So it wasn't just, you know, well, obviously I wasn't a stay in America sort of person.
Yeah, I mean, we do have, we do have differences of opinion. And when that happens, I sort it out.
According to the rules.
Yeah.
Back to family.
My family.
Yes.
Yes.
Obviously, you have lots of nieces and nephews, yes. Or at least on either side.
Yes.
Did you guys ever consider adopting, or was being an uncle always enough?
It's very topical, isn't it?
It is. Well, this came in just about that time.
Yeah, we have thought about children.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not as deeply as other couples who have eventually done it, but I think we've considered it. But it's, for various reasons, it's not right now.
Mm.
And, I mean, I've never personally had a need to have children. I've never felt that need or desire. Not that I dislike children, because I love children, and my nephews and nieces are spoilt accordingly. But, I suppose I'd never really thought about it, and now we've thought about it recently. It's complicated, and it has its risks for the children and for us as well. You know, we've been together 12 years and got our life just the way we like it, and there's a bit of selfishness in there about losing that. But I think also I would worry about just having a child and the issues. You know, I mean, it's a big responsibility.
Mm.
It's a bigger, yep. You know, a dog's a big enough responsibility, and having a child is like, whew, that's big time.
Yeah, many times exponentially.
Yeah, and I don't know if I could do it. I'm too organized for children and things like that. And
well, like you're saying, basically neither of us had a need to breed.
No,
or anything like that.
That's a terrible saying.
Well, yeah, it's not mine. I didn't invent it.
I never felt the internal desire. I know some men do, that they just so want children that it's not funny. But maybe because I've got so many nephews and nieces, I've never felt that. I've been able to experience that with the kids through my brothers and sisters.
Mm.
And, you know, they've never been distant from us. They've always been brought up close to us and part of our lives. So
yeah, so it wasn't like it was something we felt we were missing out on either.
No, and I'm not sad
that
we don't have children.
Mm. Although, maybe when we're 85, we might feel differently.
Well, no, well, I'll have plenty of nephews and nieces, so it'll come calling.
But then it'll be grand-nephews and nieces.
Exactly.
Did the fact that Nigel has partial Maori background factor into his others' acceptance of being gay? I'm totally ignorant of any prejudices that might be specific to Maori. Now, this is in a gay context.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a really interesting one, because there are cultural issues, cultural implications for Maori, but it's just like any other culture. It's once you start to get a bit closer to home, it's dependent on the people and the individuals. But culturally, gay men have had, if you look back through history, the history that wasn't destroyed by the missionaries, the Christian missionaries, gay men had a quite a high status in society, because they were left home during wartime. They were left home with the women to help protect the homes, and so they had a certain status. So, but I mean, some of that was lost through Christian missionaries, and so a lot, if you talk to generally to Maori today, it would be a lot of it would be filtered through a Christian,
which is true for Pacific Islanders as well.
That's right, and that is actually a false.
It's colonial rather than
traditional indigenous. But if you look at the wider whānau, which is my wider family where I come from, that's my hapu and my tribe.
Hapu is a sub-tribe.
Yeah. I'm accepted on the marae. You sleep with me on the marae, which is in our communal meeting house when we go there.
You mean literally sleep, by the way?
Yes. We go every, because it's a communal sleeping arrangement. So
I've actually never talked about marae.
Okay. Well, the marae or the wharenui is where everyone sleeps. So
it's like a meeting house.
It's a big meeting house, and you could fit literally, 50 or 60 people there sleeping. And, you and I always sleep together, and you're accepted there. And I'm accepted traditionally because I'm the oldest son, and you as my partner. So everybody sees you as my partner, and it's not a problem. But that's because my whānau are very accepting, and it's about family, and it's about who, it's not about what you are, it's who you are in your place. So it's not that they wouldn't see you as Arthur the homosexual, Arthur the gay person. They'd see you as Arthur, who's Nigel's partner, who's now part of our whānau. You know, this is your family now, this is who you belong to. So that's how you're seen, as belonging to us. So.
And all the extended family has always been very welcoming and supportive, your aunties and uncles and things.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily aunties or uncles in the traditional European sense of the word either.
No, well, I mean, anybody who... distant. Yeah, and also, I mean, I have my direct aunts and uncles on the Maori side of my family, but also, my uncles and aunties who are you know, the elders, older people of the whānau as well. So, does that answer the question?
I think it does.
Yeah,
I think so. I should probably, or have you, talk more about marae and how it's structured and things like that, but I think we'll leave that for the next one.
Okay. It's a story in itself.
Yeah, because people have asked for you to talk more about about Māori issues and whatnot and culture, but I think that's probably a discussion in itself.
Okay.
One of the questions that won't go away, when are you guys doing the civil ceremony thing? I know you talked about it in passing. Are you waiting for a specific time or event? Well, the short answer is no, we're not waiting.
I was talking about this on the way to work the other day. I carpool with some people that I work with, and we were having exactly this conversation because one of them is one of the people that I carpool with is a very good friend of mine, and we went to her wedding 2 years ago.
Mm.
And so, yeah, she was doing the, when are you guys getting married? And I was like, oh, you know, this is something that pops up every now and again. I don't know, why haven't we?
Well, part of it is that there have been other things going on, like your brother got married.
That's
and
right.
Things like that. I mean, that's part of it. But it's not a simple thing, because we really can't just have it just at the registry office with a couple of people. We really have to have everybody.
Yes, I mean, we would like to elope.
And how many people are there if the whole family's around?
Oh, about 36, just the immediate family. So
that's without any of the extended folks.
And yeah, and that...
And they would all be disappointed if they couldn't attend.
I know. So I officially would like to jump the broom and go to the registry office and get over and done with, but my family would never forgive me.
Yes.
if I did that, because they would hate to pass up the opportunity for a party. But yeah, and I suppose it's just finding the right time. And I mean, we're... You know, I don't know. It's not that I don't want to, because I accept the fact that, or I always think of the fact that we will eventually get married for legal reasons and for the fact that we want to be together for the rest of our lives. But I also, it's just getting around to it, you know.
Yeah.
It's you know, you got to think of all the things that you got to think of. I'm too busy at work to be thinking about that sort of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah. Maybe we should get a wedding planner. but then, see, I don't want to do that whole big thing, you know.
No.
I want to have a quiet Saturday evening, sitting around the fire with friends and family and loved ones. And you and I stand up in front of a roaring fire in the winter. We say our vows. You know, all the official bits start done, and then we have a lovely dinner and party all night and sing our tits off in my karaoke. And that's it. That's what I want to do. It's just finding the time to plan something.
And
like
a place.
That.
Because in the place. It's harder to find a place like that than you might think.
Yeah. And just, you know, and every time I think of it, I think, oh, maybe we should plan it for a couple of weeks away. You know, you can't plan something like for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
People have to make plans, and you have to give them time. And it's really hard to plan something 6 months ahead. Because if I think 6 months ahead, I'm thinking, oh, it's no longer winter, so having a roaring fire, well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, if we leave it for a few months, it's going to be summer again, and then we have to wait till next year, and it's like, oh, let's elope. Let's go to the registry office. Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I have thought of just ringing up Mum and saying, come on up, we're going to go to the registry office. And you know, and Mum's always said to me, or said to us, whatever you guys want to do, you should do, but... I know she wants us to do the ceremony thing, and I know she wants us to, you know, do the big family thing, so...
Yeah,
I think they would be upset and disappointed.
Yeah, and it just wouldn't be the same if we just had a party afterwards. It's just not the same.
Maybe we could have a surprise civil union or something like that.
Well, I don't know how we'd pull that off.
Oh, well, we could invite all these people around for a party and just say it's a party and then go... And by the way, we're going to get civilly united today. Surprise! Or something like that.
Yeah, but then the people who didn't show up would feel really bad.
That's true, too.
So we'd have to let them know in advance.
Anyway, so yeah, it's not like we're avoiding it.
I suppose we'll get to it one of these days.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, because, I mean, legally, everything's pretty much the same anyway because we've been together for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So under law, we're pretty much...
It's just a few little things at this stage, really.
Yeah.
I mean, like next of kin status and things like that.
Yeah.
But, so as I said, there's no real reason we haven't done it. We just haven't done it. That's all.
Lazy's probably a
good
enough excuse.
Well, and the thing is that I've never wanted, because I never considered the never really considered the possibility of marrying a man anyway. But I always thought it was absurd how much money people spend on weddings in some cases. I mean, when they had all that coverage about all those people who were getting married in 07, 07, 07, I read one article somewhere where they said the average cost of a wedding in the United States is $20,000.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Why spend that kind of money when you could use it toward a house?
Oh, I could buy good television and some stereos and some computers for that.
Quite a lot of that as well.
Yeah. And a car.
For $20,000 US, yeah. Well, that was all of John's questions. He ends it by saying, okay, I'm through playing Ramble Redhead for the moment.
Oh, speaking of Ramble Redhead, I haven't been interviewed by Tom yet, have I?
No, because you were sick when you were supposed
to. Yeah, I was actually. I was very sick. So I'm sorry, Tom. I'll make it up to you, I promise.
I'm sure you will. I thought I would add some questions that Walt actually asked of me. Walt's another listener, but I thought I might get some of your perspective on some of these things. Because I've already answered them. But anyway, he asked, I'm kind of curious as to what was the biggest culture shock for you when you first arrived in New Zealand. Talk about me, of course. And I said that it was the little things. But do you remember anything that I was saying at the time that was shocking? Because I don't really remember anything significant.
Yeah, probably the two things. Driving on the wrong side of the road.
For me.
Yeah.
Right side for here.
And that was an issue because that freaked you out. You were tense. You were really tense around that.
Well, the other part, though, was driving with you in the car was like driving with your dad, as I've said on many occasions.
Yeah. And making yourself understood.
Mm.
You know, you had a lot of trouble with people understanding your accent. Especially my nephews and nieces.
Mm.
You couldn't understand them. And they could understand you because, you know, they had heard Americans talk all their lives on television and stuff like that. Mm. But you've struggled to understand them a bit.
Although, in fairness, when I first arrived, one of your nieces didn't have any front teeth.
Yeah, but...
That didn't help.
Yeah, so that was something that stressed you, and it stressed you making yourself understood sometimes. Because, you know, I mean, New Zealand's like any other place. We have a lot of migrants here as well, so making yourself understood, just in everyday things, you found hard sometimes. And I remember you used to come home frustrated because you... Yeah, so it was little things mainly that did niggle you, but it wasn't that they were wrong. It wasn't like you were walking around saying, "Oh, it's crap here," or they do it stupidly. It was more, "I don't know what to do about this," or "I don't know how to go about doing this," and stuff like that. You know, simple stuff that you would know that anyone like a Kiwi growing up would know. You know, when you go to get your license, you know where to go. You know, you go to the Land Transport Office.
Well, in those days, you went to the police.
Yeah, exactly. So you just knew where to go, and whereas you had to find out where to go, as well as find out how to get there and all of that sort of stuff. So stuff that is just part of your culture. As you grow up, you pick up from your parents, you pick up from your friends, you pick up from your peers, you pick up from just interacting with people. Like what the things that you do and where you do them and how you do them. It's just a natural part of your makeup. It would be the same if I went to America. You know, if I wanted to file a tax return, I wouldn't know where to start. You know, I know it would be the IRS or something like that, but I wouldn't know where to start. Whereas, you know, here in New Zealand, you know, I know where to start. You know straight away what to do with little bits and pieces like that. You know which companies to go to get the certain things that
or
you need
stores.
To do. And stores, yeah. You know, I mean, you didn't even know, you know, like drug stores have certain things in America, you know, whereas we have chemists and they have certain things that you can't buy or can buy because, you know, we have different drugs that are available and different things. You know, over-the-counter stuff here is different to over-the-counter stuff in America.
Yeah, I didn't mention that a little bit, like that when I first arrived, you couldn't get aspirin, you could only get Dispirin.
Yeah.
And it was soluble. You put it on your tongue and melt it in water. No, in those days, just put it in water.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get tablets, which is what I was used to.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right, it's a lot of little things. He also went on and asked, when was it that New Zealand first started feeling like home to you? And I had said that, in thinking about it, I thought it was sometime after, like, 2002 or so. The reason being that up until then, we'd been planning around trips going back to America, and there was even a point where you'd entered the green card lottery. And so there was this little bit of thinking that we might move there at one stage. So there was a lot of this looking back business going on for several years. And so I just, for no particular reason, really, felt that it was sometime around 2002 or so that I just wasn't doing that anymore.
So what, that's you... Did you make a conscious thing?
Decision? Not really.
Or is that a hindsight?
Yeah, hindsight.
It's funny because I would have said that was a lot earlier than that. maybe it was not about New Zealand, but maybe it was about being home, was I remember, because the first time we went to the States in 99, was that the first time we went?
97.
The first time we went in 97, I remember, because we went for 5 weeks, and I remember at the end of the 5 weeks there, you said to me, oh man, I can't wait to get home. You know, it was just like, you just wanted to get home, back to your, you know, back to home. And I don't know if that was probably not a New Zealand thing as much, because I know it did, it was harder going in the States than you remembered it being. But part of that's about holiday, you know, when you're finished, you're tired at the end of a long holiday, you just want to get home to your own bed and those sorts of things. But I think that's the first time that I sort of thought, oh, he does see it as home. And never looked back from there on in. You know, our trips were never, you know, and then it was a slow drift away from that point on.
That's interesting. But I don't really remember that specific. I mean, I don't remember saying that, but I can imagine that I would have, because, well, I just think that it's kind of interesting that I wasn't in any way thinking I'd like to stay.
No, like that. No, you were anxious to get back home, because I remember the last week we were tired and we'd had enough.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, you know, we've had enough. It's time. I really want to go home and back to normal things.
Well, just leave these, because there might be things that you can think of. Is there anything American that I still miss to this day? And I just like maybe professional baseball and root beer, because you can't get it.
Yeah, just because you can't get it.
Yeah, that's the only reason.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that I've mentioned.
I'm just trying to think if there's anything that you mentioned that you miss. I know one thing that you do miss, sticky bacon.
That's true. Yeah, because the New Zealand bacon just doesn't get all crispy like American bacon does.
Yeah, our bacon's more like Canadian bacon, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Right. But haven't I seen streaky bacon here sometimes called Canadian bacon?
Yeah, I don't know, but we like our bacon to have a bit of meat on it, not just fat, like Americans.
Well, you gotta have the fat.
Yeah. You like, bacon or something.
I've forgotten that, actually. I suppose I don't really miss it anymore.
Yeah. I miss some things in America.
Like what?
White Castles.
Yeah. White Castle. Krispy Kreme.
Sci-Fi Channel. I've mentioned those before.
Uh-huh.
Boring.
Yes, well.
Yeah.
And is there anything you discovered in New Zealand that you can't imagine living without, Nigel and the pets excluded? I added the extended family. I said one day international cricket.
Yeah, I could live with that one day, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, but I like it. But yeah. I like going there for the same reason I used to like going to to baseball games. It's the atmosphere.
Moving right along.
But I can't think of anything that I've said.
What, that you couldn't live without?
Yeah. You would probably be able to notice that more than me.
What couldn't you live without? You used to do pies, big time.
Oh, yeah.
Meat pies. You seem to have got over that.
Yeah, I'm over that.
Yeah, that was an obsession and a half.
Well, it's because it was all new.
But it wasn't new. It went on for years.
No, it didn't. Slight exaggeration.
Years.
I only had them for lunch every day for the first year maybe year.
Or two.
No, it wasn't that long, because I was only at that job for about 18 months.
Seemed to go on forever, meat pies.
And then after that, I stopped.
And what couldn't you live without? You'd probably find a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things, you know, some of the things that we do have, like fresh produce and things like that, that we struggled to find in the States, it's not something you'd think about, but you probably find it harder to do without, that sort of thing.
Well, not even just fresh, because I think I had mentioned when I originally answered them, tinned mangoes, things like that, because remember we were trying to make that one recipe for somebody and we couldn't find tinned mangoes anywhere.
Yeah, so I mean, there'll be little things like that. Yeah. Are there major things? I don't know.
Banking? Banking's much easier here.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
But I mean, that's not the kind of thing you think about. It's just, I think if we were to be suddenly transported to living in America, then I would try to do the things that I'm used to doing here and not be able to do them. That would frustrate me, but it's the sort of thing I probably wouldn't realize I was missing until it happened. And it's not anything I could anticipate missing, I suppose.
I know this is not going to be politically correct, but...
Uh-oh.
Well, given the political situation in America, freedom would be something that you probably miss.
Well, I think it's safe to say that a good portion of my listeners are not exactly friends of George W. Bush.
I know, but, you know, talk about paranoia, you know?
Mm.
Just that freedom to be yourself and who you are, and from that,
yeah,
that control of the religious right, that's too scary, you know?
Yeah. There have been times when I've been listening to other podcasts, like Rambo Redhead's latest, actually, is an example, where I've been thinking...
You mean Tom?
Yeah. But the podcast is Rambo Redhead.
No.
Anyway, where I've been reminded of some things I don't miss about America and how different things are here.
Yeah.
Culturally and socially and whatnot, politically.
Yeah.
Because I think when I answered that question originally, I was talking about the missing things, that the political system, I think, is one of the things I said, because it's so open and you've got so much access here that it just doesn't exist in America.
Mm.
Not even if you're talking about a member of Congress. I mean, because what are they? They represent something like 750,000 people or something like that. I can't remember anymore. Mm. It's a lot of people anyway. And the odds of you ever meeting your member of Congress, let alone getting to know them, are really remote. Whereas here, you can walk into your local MP's office and sit down and have a chat. And, but anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I would say that freedom stuff does count for a lot. And it's not, I mean, because I don't think, I mean, America's a fun place to be, and most Americans are nice people.
Hmm. Except for the religious nutcases, but yeah, that's true anyway, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something I just don't get.
Well, somebody, well, from time to time, actually, people have asked me if I miss America. Not if I am Miss America, but if I miss America. And, It's a funny question. I'm never quite sure how to answer it. But what I've started to say lately is that I miss the America I left behind sometimes.
Mm.
Because the America I left is long gone. And, I mean, some of it's the sort of things you'd see normally. You know, people move on with their lives and things change. But the political structure in America is so dramatically different than the one that I left. Not just because there was a Democrat in the White House then and a, well, sort of Republican now.
Yeah.
It's more complicated than that. I mean, all the little things that this administration has put into place that were unthinkable when I left America. Just, I mean, people would have said it was impossible for some of these sorts of things to have happened.
Yeah.
Like the Patriot Act, for instance, and the paranoia at the borders and stuff like that. I sometimes mourn the America that used to be.
Mm. I think a lot of Americans do as well.
Yeah, it's true.
Moving right along.
Yes. Well, talking about New Zealand politics, actually.
Yes.
I got an email today from Stevie B.
Yep.
And he was asking if the story was true, and it is. And
what's the story?
Well, it's about Parliament.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to decide if I want to read the whole thing or just try to summarize it.
What about Parliament?
Well, this basically what it is that Parliament recently decided to institute rules preventing any media outlet from publishing any image that, well, let's see if I can get the wording, if I can find it in a hurry. But it's satirizing, ridiculing, or denigrating lawmakers.
Yeah.
And they apparently all thought this was a great idea. Now, what this was in aid of was that Parliament was about to institute live web streaming of all of their proceedings.
Yeah.
And they were worried that if the news media were able to get the entire proceedings, they
were worried they were going to get caught with their pants down,
so to speak.
Yeah.
More likely picking their nose or sleeping or yawning or reading the paper or any of the number of other things.
Like real people.
Yeah, like they normally do.
Yeah.
So the news media started lampooning this, rightly so, and the National Party backed down. And they said they wouldn't support it in the end.
Mm.
And the reason was that all of the media outlets, well, the broadcast ones in particular, TVNZ, the state broadcaster, which has the number one rated news program, TV3, the Māori Channel, and I think maybe even Prime. Anyway, yeah,
they all did.
They all said that they would defy the law and they would go ahead and publish satirizing images.
I didn't think it was that. I thought their defiance was it was all or nothing, that they wouldn't.
Well, there are two images. One was still images, and the other was
no. Satirizing. You're jumping in. I thought their protest was all or nothing, that they would carry on as usual, and if one of them was bumped from broadcasting, that they all would go, and none of them would broadcast.
Well, you might be right. I thought
their protest was more, rather than we are going to actively satirise you, we're going to carry on satirising you, it was more of the, if one of us gets stung for it, we're all going. We'll all pull out.
Well, you could be right about that.
I thought that was the protest.
But my memory was more that they weren't planning on paying much attention to the law because they felt that
I think that is the truth. I think they said we're going to ignore the law, but we're going to stick together if one of us gets I don't know whatever they do, whether they get shut down or shut off or told off, then they would all go. They would all pull out.
Apparently, when TV3 was broadcasting their news story about the new streaming service, they broadcast a picture of one of the MPs picking his nose.
Right.
Which is supposed to be not permitted. And they were actually suspended for 7 days for showing a member of parliament sleeping. And, I mean, most commentators say that it's fair game. If somebody's sleeping in the house, then the media has every right to show it and the public has a right to see it.
Yeah.
And I would tend to go along those lines. But I think it's important to point out that the restrictions aren't necessarily any more severe than what is imposed on the coverage of Congress in the U.S. because they can't show members sleeping, as they do. They can't pan the chamber. There was an incident many years ago now where some congressman was making some inane speech on the floor of the House, and the camera operator was, for some reason, he just was didn't like what was going on, I guess, and he panned the House to show that it was a completely empty chamber except for pages and whatnot. But this guy was talking like he was talking to the full Congress. The camera person got in trouble for doing that. But those restrictions still exist in the U.S. Congress. And so then, in that sense, it's not that different, what they're trying to do. But it does make a bit of an ass of
Parliament. So why are we spending valuable time discussing this?
Just because I think it's interesting, because I got an email.
Yeah, so what was the question?
It wasn't a question.
Well, no, was it, is this for real?
Basically, yes. And I said, yes, it is for real.
Yeah, it is for real that the New Zealand government tried to pass a law to do that.
Parliament, it wasn't just the government.
Yeah.
But there was a poll that TV3 had that said 71% of New Zealanders disapproved of it. And I tend to suspect that the poll is correct, because it's the same people who got in the last election.
But those same polls you don't agree with?
No, that's Colmar Brunton.
Oh, okay.
Colmar Brunton, I don't agree with.
Can you cut out my coughing?
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
So that was just an email I'd gotten. And got an email, actually, as a post on my blog, about the storm damage from Japan.
The storm damage from Japan?
No, it's a comment. It's from Japan.
Okay.
And it's from Yoshinori, who said, "I'm glad you and your partner didn't get injured during the storm."
Me too.
"I feel sorry that the tree hit your house and damaged the roof. I'm glad no further damage was made. We had a very strong typhoon over the
weekend." What do you mean no further damage was made? Well, other than the workmen?
Oh, yeah, well, that wasn't in that particular post.
Actually, one of the workmen was cute, too. So, two of them were quite cute.
One of them was not at all.
Yeah. Moving right along.
Anyway, it said, "We had a very strong typhoon over the weekend and strong earthquake at the western part of Japan yesterday.
Eek.
Listening to your show and watching the updates on the quake do make me urge to prepare for the emergency." Because I talked about, get through and all that sort of stuff. But it was funny that he should leave he or she, I'm not sure. Because I had been saying in when I was talking about all this damage and all that we didn't have it as bad as some people did, especially the people up north who had a lot of flooding and mud to clear out and whatnot.
Yeah.
But even that stuff pales to what other parts of the world sometimes have to face. Because we don't really generally have it all that bad here, weather-wise or natural disaster.
Well, it seems to be getting worse.
That's true.
Worse since the, now with climate change.
But yeah, because
which doesn't exist, by the way.
Yeah, thanks to... Yeah, because the last event was... the storm that we just had was a once-in-150-year event. And the one before that was a once-in-100-year event.
Yeah.
And it's funny how frequently we hear this sort of thing. Well, that's basically all the little bits and pieces I wanted to go over.
Someone at the door.
Pam's here. Wonder if we should make her say hello.
What, we're putting our clothes on.
Oh, no. Come on, Johnny.
Let's finish now.
Okay.
Okay. Goodbye.
No, we'll just give a sec, because we're recording podcast.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I'll just...
Carry it off.
No. The only other thing I wanted to say is that I'm also now part of Pod Planet. I got an email saying that somebody...
Is this an advertorial?
No.
Okay.
It's good for people to know where they can find my podcast.
Advertorial. Advertorial.
No, the advertorial is, leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. And that's it for this week.
Bye, Tom.
Bye.
Bye.